tuned into the number one undisputed boxing podcast today. This is the Boxing Breakdown. Now, your heavy-handed, hard-hitting host, Mark Roxey.
What's up? What's going on out there in boxing land? This is your host, Mark Roxey, and you are listening to the Boxing Breakdown. I'm delighted to be with you this evening, and I'm excited for this evening's show. We are on pins and needles leading up to the excitement this weekend that's about to happen. So as you can see on the side of the screen, you can see that we are going to break down the Fury versus Wilder press conference. We are also going to talk a little bit about the TV undercard and the matchups that are going to take place on, I believe it's Fox Sports and ESPN Plus, I believe. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the pay-per-view heavyweight cards. The undercards, actually, and then we're going to talk about the big kahunas, the big fish, the big cheese of this weekend, which is Tyson Fury versus Deontay Wilder main event. Man, it is going to be off the chain. And so without further ado, let's see if I can rum drum my good buddy and partner in crime, Mr. Harold Hunt. What's up, Mr. Harold Hunt?
What's up, man?
Oh, man.
How you doing?
I'm good, brother. How are you?
Oh, man. You know, it's going to be great this weekend. We got a lot to talk about.
We do have a lot to talk about, man. We really, really do. And I'm just excited to chop into it, and I think it's going to be an awesome episode. And if you are listening on YouTube, if you're watching on YouTube, please make sure you join in on the conversation. Share your comments down below if you like. If you are there, it is pretty late at night. It's about 9:45 Eastern Standard Time, and yeah, man, if you're out there, just leave your comments, man, because we're going to chop it up, and we want to know what you think, our listeners. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you get your podcasts, please make sure that you share the podcast and subscribe so you can get the latest episodes right, a ringtone right to your telephone or wherever you are, to know that we just released another episode of the Boxing Breakdown with my good partner in crime right here, Mr. Harold Hunt, bro. And so, yeah, man. Hey, Harold. Let's get into this, okay?
Okay.
Let's talk about. First of all, this is the joint card, right? It's a card that's being put on by, is it PBC and Top Rank?
Yes, it's a Top Rank fight, and PBC people are involved in it. So both networks are going to be working together to give this to us.
Right. And it's ESPN Plus, and it's going to be, I mean, this is like, there's a lot. Like when I was listening and trying to figure out exactly where everything was going to go down, it's actually like, it's like a row, it's like a GPS coordinates to all the stuff that's going to happen this weekend, because there are going to be fights on television. It's, and do you know what the networks are for that? Is it going to be like Fight TV, or are you familiar with what networks it's going to be? Because I actually couldn't really figure that piece of it out. But I know that. Yeah, go ahead.
You got ESPN Plus.
Yep.
Okay. Then you got regular ESPN. Then you got FS1. So they're all jockeying back and forth to get certain fights on free TV before the pay-per-view.
Right. And then you've got pay-per-view, you've got Fox pay-per-view, right? And ESPN Plus, right? Okay. So those are the pay-per-view angles, and then the TV is, you know, the undercards are going to be on, held on TV, right? And then I guess they're going to say, okay, buy the fight, and you got to switch over and buy the pay-per-view, right?
You're right.
So let's talk about one of the fights that I'm really, really intrigued about. I'm really, I want to talk to you about the TV fight with Julian Williams, who's 27 and 2 with one draw, and he's got 16 KOs, right? Versus a Vladimir Hernandez, who's 12 and 4 with 6 KOs out of Mexico. It's like, I think it's a 154-pound division fight, and do you know much about this fight, and what are you expecting?
Well, you know, Julian's coming back. He had a loss, you know, he was defeated pretty soundly, pretty much. So he kind of took a little time off and kind of re-energized himself. And he said he wasn't really focused on the training camp because he's got so much other things going on with his real estate and this and that and the other. He said he didn't really have a great camp, and he kind of got himself in a situation where he wasn't prepared to give his best effort. So he took some time off. So this fight here is kind of a welcome back type of thing.
Right.
Where he can kind of showcase his skills. He doesn't have anybody that's really going to, you know, give him a problem at all. Shouldn't be. But it's going to be a decent fight where we should he'll get some rounds in with someone who's going to give us a little opposition. But it's not of the caliber that he's used to. But he needs to be, you know, gotten back into the game. Now, he is really fun to watch. He's mentally strong. He sticks to game plans. And when he's in shape, he's pretty much a dominant type fighter. So if you're a purist, you're going to enjoy his style.
Right. No, I get that. And I agree with you with that. Julian Williams is a very accomplished fighter, but also this guy, Vladimir Hernandez, his record doesn't indicate his skill level. Cause I think didn't he just come off of a very, very big win against Angulo.
Yes, he did well, but Angulo, is coming down the other side of the hill, if you will.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
Of course, you know, that is a good name to have on your resume, of course, but the name is more pop than the actual fighter that he defeated. However, it got him this opportunity, and he's going to have a good head on his shoulder as far as he feels like he can win, and you're going to see a good fight.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be an uphill battle for him against Julian, although, you know, I know that Julian Williams does have a purported elbow. I don't know if he still has that elbow issue. I know he had an elbow issue, you know, and I know that he took some time off, almost 21 months of a layoff. So he's coming back to the ring with a very, very long layoff, you know, almost, you know, just shy of 2 years, you know? So that's a serious amount of time to be off. So that should be, yeah, I mean, that definitely poses some questions and makes that a very intriguing fight, you know, to watch.
It's going to be a good fight.
Yeah, man. And so another one of the TV fights, Harold, if we can jump forward into the, there's a 10 round bout that's going to take place between Edgar Balanga, right? Who's 17 and 0 with 16 KOs versus Marcelo Esteban Corceras, if I said that correctly, 30 and 2 with one draw. Right, 30 wins, 2 losses with 1 draw, 16 wins coming by way of KO. This guy on paper looks like he could be some trouble. We'll see. I know that Edgar Belenga's last fight did not end with knockout. It went the distance. And I know that their team was happy about getting the rounds. That was one way to spin that. But he had been making knockouts all along. This fight is for the vacant WBO NABO super middleweight title. What are your thoughts about that, Harold?
Well, we're talking about Edgar, right?
Yeah.
Edgar Belanga. Well, as you know, he jumped into boxing pretty seriously, knocking everyone out. And he was tested his last fight.
Yeah.
He did knock the gentleman down a couple of good times, and he proved that he's had some skill set. So he's going to be fun to watch anyway, because he's going to want to continue that streak or start a new streak. So he's going to try to knock people out. Now, I know we got a pay-per-view card, and you have to pay your hard-earned money to see the four main bouts. But I'm telling you, the undercard is great
right
all the way through. So even if you decide not, you have to work or what have you, you decide not to purchase the other thing, the main, you got so many good fights on these undercards that are free, and this is one of them.
Right.
This would be a headliner on any other time. Not a pay-per-view, but it would be a headline on Showtime or Fox or any other major network
for sure
that's on regular television. So please look at it. Now, he's being tested. This is not someone that they're feeding him. He has to fight.
Right.
And he could lose this fight. He could. So, and this is his first straps. He'll get some straps if he wins these fights, and then he'll get ranked higher, and then he'll become someone that they have to pay attention to more than being just a sensationalized knockout person.
Right. Right. Powerful statement, Harold. But very, very true. I mean, you know, that makes that, I mean, these guys put together, the promoters put together, I think TGB is involved in this as a promotion, but they did a really good job at putting together that, you know, the TV undercard. And everybody, I mean, if you haven't seen it, if you guys are listening in out there and you haven't gotten a chance to see Edgar Berlanga fight, not to just slant it on one side, because I'm sure that Marcelo Esteban Corsegas is pretty good too. I mean, he's from Argentina. He comes out of Argentina. So I haven't really seen too much of this guy. But you got to watch those guys from Argentina, man, because some of those guys can really bang. And then Edgar Berlanga coming out of Brooklyn, New York, he's amazing. He's an amazing fighter. He just became a father, you know, so, you know, the fact that he's a father now, you know, he's got a lot to prove, a lot. He's fighting for his family, and you know, it's just he's known as the monster. So we'll see, man. We'll see on that 10 round bout. We'll definitely see what's going to happen.
Yeah, that definitely changes his focus. Before, it was the bravado and knocking people out.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's already had cars and Ferraris and all that maybe two, three years ago. So it's not even for that anymore. For, you know, now it's a whole different number of opportunities for yourself when you have a child that you have to feed. And are those out there who are parents or what have you, once you have your first child, you shift.
Right.
And now for him, a shift could really take off his career, because now he has someone to fight for, and he may be more focused on getting those knockouts so he can market himself better.
Yeah. I mean, it's put up or shut up. These are big, you know, those early fights obviously have been, you know, most of the fights have been picked fights and, you know, carefully designed, career matches. But, you know, as you step up, you're fighting a guy. Look, he's fighting a guy that has double the amount of experience that he has in the professional boxing arena. And yes, the guy does have two losses, so he can be beat. But he also has 16. He has the same number of KOs as Edgar Berlanga. And to be honest, like, it could be, you know, his record could be better than what he's able to produce, meaning Marcelo Esteban. But, you know, it could also be a situation where, you know, he comes in and he upsets the Berlanga. So you just don't know. Again, a great pick for a fight. Great on paper. Definitely is a must-see TV kind of fight. And I'm excited about it too. And then we moving right along, Harold. I guess we can jump up into the pay-per-view stuff, because I'm getting, it's going to get real juicy in a second here, everyone. But when we talk about the pay-per-view, let me just bring up my graphic here. want to just switch this off here. And yeah, so the pay-per-view, again, that it's an ESPN Plus and Fox Sports pay-per-view. I think it's 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, 6 o'clock Pacific Time is when the bouts occur. It's an all heavyweight action card. The undercard is all heavyweight. So, I have a feeling this is going to be, they're going to do good numbers for this pay-per-view. And, the first bout, Harold, I really love to, talk to you about is this, NABF heavyweight title. It's only a 6 rounder, but it's against, you know, the much talked about, highly credited Jared Anderson, who's 9-0 with 9 KOs, versus a gentleman by the name of Vladimir Tretskin, who's 20-0 with 1 draw, and he's got 12 wins coming, big wins coming by way of KO. And so it looks like they have really put their money where their mouth is to create a real fight here. So what are your thoughts about this?
You know, Jared is called the real big baby. Now you have a couple other players, other fighters who have named themselves big baby. And there's a basketball player named himself big baby,
right?
But he calls himself the real big baby. Now, Jared Anderson wasn't a football player or some other sport. He has been bred in boxing. So he has all the fundamentals.
Right.
Now, he is in a situation where he's knocking everyone out right now, and he happens to be one of the sparring partners for Mr. Fury. Supposedly, what we've been reading, Mark and I have saw that, you know, he really gives Wilder good work. And right. Bob Arum uses a different term as in good work, as in he's getting his butt kicked at times.
Wow.
And they have to kind of pull Jared off of him. Now, his opponent is Russian. Now, of course, the fare over there is a little different. It's kind of a stand-up style. You know, they're not really moving off the jab and all that type of thing. So
right.
Him coming over here to fight Jared, he's going to see a little different style. It's going to be easy for Jared because he's going to be that's a kind of a target type thing. His record looks good. He's a big guy. He's strong. He's going to move. But he's really not in a situation where he can really affect Jared too much because he's just not a mover. He's just not – he's kind of plodding. So it'll be some nice target practice.
Right. Yeah, no. Well, I mean, you characterize it as target practice, but, you know, let's not forget this Tretskin guy, Vladimir Tretskin, is 20-0.
He's 20, true. He's 20 I'm not discounting that.
Right.
But his opposition is nowhere near – that 20-0 record that he garnered is not near the type of caliber that Jared is.
Right.
Nor has the style he's seen. So it's going to be totally foreign to him. I mean, he's going to train and what have you, but he hasn't seen his kind of movement or hand movement, or he has not going to see that over there, you know, where he fights.
Right.
You know, he's fought that he's had.
Yeah, no, I got that. And, you know, you bring up a good point, but you know, you never know, man. Like I wonder,
this is boxing.
Yeah. And I'll be very interested to see what happens in the betting world, you know, some of the betting, platforms to see what the odds are for this fight. Because I mean, you know, again, you know, bigger upsets have occurred, you know? And so, yeah, for all intent and purposes, we do believe that Jared Anderson should win this fight, but, you know, you just don't know what you have in a game, Vladimir Tretskin, coming into this fight. You know, he's got a lot to prove, I'm sure, and so does Jared Anderson. I think I believe in one of the press conferences, I heard him say that he really doesn't have too much to prove, which I thought was really interesting that he would say that, but because when you only have a record of 9-0, you know, there's a lot to prove. You know, you've got a long way to go to get where you're going.
Well,
where you're going.
It's a 6 rounder, which is peculiar to me because The other gentleman has fought more than six rounds several times.
I think it's an eight rounder, Harold. I believe it's an eight rounder.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay. Eight rounder. Yeah, that's a little more feasible.
Yeah.
Because a six rounder, you really can't get into what you need to get into, and one person get far enough ahead,
Where
you don't get a chance to develop your strategy, and then that's not necessarily, I wouldn't say fair, but that's not going to necessarily give us a great fight with two calibers of fighters that we have here. So being eight, and I'm misinformed, being eight, that really adds more intrigue to it.
Yeah, no, it really does. And, you know, it is also for the NABF. I don't know if you heard me in the beginning, but it's an NABF. I don't think it's a world title. It might be an interim title or something.
It's a USA title. It's an American title.
NABF. Okay.
Yes, which is great because you get all the American belts, the NABO, USBA, this NABF,
right,
and all the other underling belts that are associated with the Big Four. You get all those. You put yourself in a situation where you have a chance to fight some eliminators to get to the champion. So this is a big deal. It changes his money also.
Yeah, that's a good point.
If he wins, but his purse will be larger because he does have these belts, not local, but national belts.
Yeah. No, I get that. And that's a good point. Hopefully you're listening, Jared Anderson. You're really listening to what Mr. Hunt is saying here, that you need to make sure you get that win because big things are going to happen for you. For sure. I mean, big things have already happened, but you know what that means. And as you said earlier, you know, Jared Anderson has been sparring Tyson Fury. I think he's done some sparring with Brian Jennings, Joseph Parker, and again, Tyson Fury has actually said, I've heard him say in a couple of different interviews, that he believes that Jared Anderson is the future of the heavyweight division. So, you know, I mean, for Tyson Fury to come out and say that publicly, that's quite a statement for the young Jared Anderson.
I would love to see that sparring, man. That's probably some beautiful stuff in there because Tyson has to probably fight a little bit of a round for real.
Yeah.
to stave off embarrassment because, you know, when you're young like that and you get a chance to spar the heavyweight champion of the world, you're going all out. Whereas the champion, he's kind of just, you know, I'm just looking at what you're saying. I'm working on these little things or whatever. But I think if he gets touched a few times, he has to kind of go into his regular fight mode. And that is what I want to see in sparring.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So I suppose that you're going for Jared Anderson on this fight, huh?
Well, just because of the style is something that the Russian gentleman has not seen. And, you know, the American style or urban style, or whatever style you want to say, when you're moving and you're jabbing and you're dropping that right hand and you're giving angles and you're not straight up and down, you know, that style usually prevails unless you get touched.
All right. Unless you get touched. It is heavyweight boxing, Harold.
Yes.
I will remind the listeners, this is heavyweight boxing. Anything can happen.
Absolutely.
Anything can happen. And speaking of anything happening, let's take a look at the next bout. I think this is I don't know if it's a co-main feature or not, but I can't remember. But Robert Helengus, who's 30-3 with 19 KOs versus Adam Kowalnik.
Adam Kowalnik. His pronunciation, shout out to him. It's a Polish surname, and it's really melodic, actually. I just can't say it.
Kowalnik.
Yes.
Kowalnik. I think it's Kowalnik. But anyway, if we pronounce your name incorrectly, please do not find us in the arena and knock us out because you are a big man, Mr. Adam Kowalnik. 20-1 with 15 big wins coming by way of KO. I think his nickname is the Babyface Assassin, and Robert Helengus' his nickname is the Nordic Night, the Nordic Nightmare. Right? He's out of Finland.
Yes, he is actually from Viking blood. His heritage is of the Vikings, the Norsemen of that century.
Wow.
He is a descendant of a Viking. There is no doubt about that. And he's played that in his marketing and that type of thing.
So, wow.
That's pretty good in that. As far as Adam's concerned, he was on the fast track to one of the contenders to fight any of the three big boys.
Right.
But he got in a situation with this gentleman and he got hit early and he never recovered.
Yeah.
Now, that was a situation where he was hurt, but he didn't know how to recover. And that's something you have to learn in the gym. If you get hurt, what to do? Mark, I'm sure you can speak on that better than I.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we do all kinds of drills specifically designed for, to replicate what it feels like to get hit. There's all kinds of things we do, and there's all kinds of conversations that take place. And sometimes in sparring, you might get rocked a little and you might act a little typical for when you get rocked. And so not knowing what that feels like, sometimes it can come across as a very odd sensation. It can come across as a very, it's very disorientating. If you're used to doing the hard hitting and you're not getting caught and you've never been touched like that, you know, what happens is you get this false sense about yourself. And then when you do get touched, you have no idea what to do because you never felt that sensation before. And you're really not sure even what's happening. Right. But by the time you know what's happening, it's already happened. So it's a very peculiar kind of situation for those of you that are listening out there. But yeah, you really have to do a lot of work on what you do to, number one, not get in that situation where you are going to get, there's a difference between getting hit, right, or not winning a fight and really getting hurt, not really competing, if you will. You know, there's a difference. Yeah. And so that a lot of that has to do with how you fight. What your game plan is, and if there is a game plan, because some of these guys don't have game plans. They just go out there and do what they know works, and it works for a long time, and then it stops working, and then they don't know what to do, and which is kind of, we'll talk a little bit about that shortly, because we're going to get into, the main event. We're going to talk about that in a couple seconds, but is this fight is intriguing as well. It's going to be a great fight. This is a pay-per-view fight. Okay. The Jared Anderson fight and the Robert Helengus, versus Adam Kowalnik. They're both pay-per-view fights and, they're going to be amazing. It's going to be a great, great fight. And we have one more fight to talk about on the undercard of the pay-per-view, Harold. And that is the Ife Ajaba. Ajaba?
Yes.
From Nigeria. Yes. He's from Nigeria, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and he's 15-0, and he's facing off against Frank Sanchez, who's 18-0 with 13 KOs. I think that Ajaba, all of his wins have come within the distance. None of them have been by KO. He's facing a tough Frank Sanchez, who's out of Cuba. And this is for the WBC Continental Americas and the WBO NABO heavyweight title. This is a co-main event. And, I think this is a power versus skill kind of fight, Harold. What do you think?
Well, Ife Ajaba is famous for getting in the ring to fight a gentleman. And as soon as they said fight, the gentleman got out the ring and walked out the ring. you guys seen that footage.
I remember that.
Now, Ajaba, he's powerful. He hits hard. He's been knocked down a couple of times. He's trained by Ronnie Shields. He's got good skills, but he started kind of late. Now, Sanchez has Cuban pedigree, Cuban amateur training, and fundamentals. So usually, just on paper, Marcus, we're talking about on paper, that type of pedigree allows you an advantage. Now, Sanchez is more a counterpuncher, but he's a good size a man, and he's got great pedigree skills. Now, Ajagba is strong, and he's coming with his discipline that he's recently gotten, if you want to say it, compared to Sanchez.
Right.
So, in my opinion, Sanchez's pedigree is going to protect him and help him have an opportunity to win. Especially him being a counterpuncher.
Right.
And Ajagba doesn't have that in his repertoire. He's going to be coming forward. So he's stepping right into Sanchez's type of situation. Now, Sanchez he's fighting in, he's coming from the Canelo camp. So they're inherently all counterpunchers, Canelo and everyone in that area, the counterpunchers. So what we're going to see is a bull rushing in, and we're going to see Sanchez really do some good work with his pedigree.
Right. Yeah, man. I mean, this is going to be a very, very good fight. I am kind of going toward, it being a clinic from Mr. Sanchez, but, I just you never know, because, again, it's another heavyweight bout, and anything can happen. And I know that did you say Ajabwa or Ajaba? Ajaba, right?
Well, I've said it's Ajagba.
Ajagba.
That's how I pronounce it. Okay. Usually.
I got you.
Ajagba.
Yeah, man. So, he's a power puncher. So, he's going to come out there swinging for the fences. And if he catches you, you might go to sleep. Very intriguing.
Much. But he has been hit. He has been down. He does come in to kill, and he can be hit.
Right.
So.
Right.
And he doesn't have the discipline as of yet to know how to get out of the way, how to pair punches. Right now, he's just running through folk. So this is going to be a great fight. I mean, these fights, I've read where people are saying this is some of the best undercard they've seen in many, many years, where you don't know who's going to win. There's no walkovers for anybody, actually.
Yeah, no. As we're going through this, for like the third time, right? looking at all this, all these fights. I mean, these are solid fights. I mean, this is not they're breaking out all the stops for this card, man.
Reminds me of the old school days, man, when Don King used to stack it.
It's
ridiculous.
It's stacked, all right, man. It's definitely stacked. I mean, if this doesn't produce an absolutely outstanding evening, I don't know what to say, man. Because this is, I don't know.
It's going to be on two platforms. You got the two political parties working together. They're using their fighters to oppose the other fighters.
Right. Right.
The whole thing is a nice melting pot of all the stuff that boxing fans need to see as far as good quality fights, and everyone is shaking hands and working together on this. So it's just good. It's just really, really good. It's worth your money. It sure is.
Yeah, and I remember us back in the pandemic days. I remember us having a podcast talking about why the promoters don't work more together, and it's just a blessing to be here and actually see this happening, for sure. For the boxing fans especially. For us, those of you that are out there, you're in for quite a treat if you get to buy this pay per view. And also check out the undercards. This is going to be an amazing, amazing card. And then, Harold, without any more waiting, all right, because I'm just like, I mean, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed talking about all those fights. But what I really want to do is I really, really want to talk about the main event, Tyson Fury versus Deontay Wilder for the WBC heavyweight title. That's what I really, really want to talk about. So come on, let's go. Let's go. Let's talk about this fight.
Well, let's start with the press conference, okay?
Yeah.
Now, that was really interesting, just the dynamic that was going on there. For those who watched it or who didn't watch it, simply, they both came out, and Deontay came out first, and he sat down, and it was commentated by the lady host from PBC. Her name escapes me at the present time. They called Tyson Fury. It took him almost 5 minutes to come out. you couldn't write this stuff. So he came out, and, you know, he had a suit on, and I'm sure you all have seen the pictures, what have you. But he refused to sit down. And she kept asking, will you please sit down? He said, no, I'm good. I've been sitting all the time. I want to stand up.
Right.
So it threw off the optics of the cameras. So the cameras had to stay back because they had to get all the fighters in the frame, you know, for the optics. But because Tyson stood up, they had to stay back. So that kind of changed the way it looked.
Right.
Now, as far as his posture and what have you, he was very aggressive. He was like a panther in a cage, whereas Deontay was sitting on his stool and he was purposely scrolling through his phone as if to look very unenthused or
uninterested. Uninterested, yeah.
uninterested, yeah, in the whole proceedings. Whereas every word was in his mind. He was listening and thinking and contemplating constantly. There was no way that he didn't hear or understand, or he just was very stoic, but he was taking it all in.
Yeah.
What did you see, Mark?
No, I agree. I thought it was a battle. I mean, they were premeditated about their entrances, right? So they both had that staged. I know that Tyson Fury, you know, kind of went at Deontay Wilder for not wearing a shirt, copying him and calling himself a king when he's not really a king. And, you know, I mean, it was just like a mental, it was mental gymnastics is what it was. They were just going at it with each other mentally. And everything seemed to be staged and premeditated. Like they knew what they were trying to do in that press conference, you know? And, I thought it was, you know, I definitely thought that Tyson Fury, if you want to go into the mental gymnastics, I felt that Tyson Fury really, dominated the conversation. I mean, that was just my take. I don't know what you felt about that, but I thought that Tyson Fury was just, you know, what does he call him? A dosser or something like that?
Yeah, you're a big dosser.
Yeah, he just uses that over and over again. And he has been for like the last three fights or the last two fights. And now this one. So he just doesn't get off that, you know, that I don't even know what that really means. And I don't want to know what a dosser is, but let's just go with the fact that, you know, he kept calling Deontay Wilder that, and he wouldn't get off of it, you know?
So what I saw and I enjoyed the most was Deontay attempted to be really stoic and silence is golden and what have you.
Yeah.
But Fury got him out of that, and he went into his dialogue. Now, he was forced to defend some of the things that he said about the gloves and the egg weights and this and that. And the
right. Other.
So when he opened that door, Tyson jumped all on. Oh. You shouldn't have fired Breland. You this, you that. I mean, he just gave him opportunity to poke at him. You know, yeah. By doing that. Oh, the lady's name was Kate Abdo, and she's pretty good. But in a sense, she kind of lost control because they start over talking to one another. and she couldn't necessarily allow get them not to do so. She did her very best, but obviously Tyson was pretty much over talking her. Deontay was very respectful. He respected her stance and the whole thing. Right. But after a while, when it seemed that Tyson was uncontrollable by her, he went ahead and went that way, kind of sidestepping her authority.
Yeah, no, I mean, I felt like she never had control. She never had control from the beginning of the press conference. I mean, he came in and he didn't want to sit down. So that was the start of it. He was like, nah, I think I'm going to just stand. I don't need to sit. I've been sitting all day. Right. So there was that. And I don't think she had much control over the whole proceedings, you know, including at the end, which we'll touch on later on. But, you know, I mean, I thought, you know, I was thinking about the fact that Tyson Fury recently had a baby about almost 8 weeks now. It's almost 8 weeks, I think, since he had his child. And I'm thinking that, like, when I'm looking at him, I'm kind of feeling like I'm looking at a different guy, a guy that's a little more intense and a little bit more, maybe he's got something else to fight for here, you know? And I know that his baby was sick. She had some medical problems. And, you know, what that did was take away a little bit. I think it probably took him away from the focus of the fight camp a little bit. But I think that he knows what he has to do. You know, he's pulled himself back. And that's kind of what I got out of listening to him talk a little bit about that, you know?
Yes, the child was premature, female child, and he spent a few days or so, by the side of the child.
Yeah.
But reports are the child was never sick, it was just premature. And when you're premature, they just need to be sure that everything is functioning.
Yeah.
So there's no, at this time, there's no cerebral palsy or mental or physical defect or mental. It's just the baby came early. And that being the case, he has opportunity to focus knowing that, you know, the child is normal.
It just
came a little early. Two of my daughters were premature like that, but they had nothing physically wrong with them other than they were small.
Right.
So once that hurdle is cleared, you know, you have a decent, I mean, you're mentally, you're okay. And that's where he is. He's mentally okay. The doctors told him this child's just small, no feeding tubes or breathing tubes. The child's just small.
So right.
The child will pick up that weight that they were just pick up because it was 7 months, came out 7 months. It was only 7 months, not nine.
Right.
So I saw the confidence in him as you did.
Yeah, I really did pick up on that. You know, I mean, when you pay attention to the small details, sometimes the small details can be a big thing, you know, going into a fight like this. And, you know, one of the other things that I also picked up on is thinking about the fact that Deontay Wilder has been out of the ring for almost 20 months now, right? It's almost been almost 2 years. And if my memory serves me correct, and that, you know, he's been training the whole time though. And he's been training with Malik Scott and they've been doing a pretty incredible job. Even Sugar Hill commented on the fact that he believed Malik Scott was doing a great job with Deontay Wilder and that it was kind of inspiring them to train harder and to do more work because they could see that Deontay Wilder had this eye of the tiger, if you will, for lack of a better pun, but you know, he has this eye of the tiger coming into this fight, you know?
Well, you have revenge factor and get back factor.
Yeah.
And at times that understanding, that feeling, that drive can overshadow a skill set.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure.
That you don't have because you are so determined to get that get back back.
Right.
And this is, you can only use this maybe once
yeah.
or twice in your yeah. career or in your life where your desire to succeed outweighs the skill level you have to actually achieve it.
Right.
So that being the case, he is really going to sell out at all expense because he is fighting for his own identity as a man going forward.
Yeah.
Because the situation was what it was, how he lost, and he says he was this, that, and the other. So his motivation is just purely just, it's kind of like a football team who comes out there, they got us all their adrenaline, and by the second half, they have no adrenaline and they get beat. But the first half, they was do really well because they were just so hyped. But when the talent has to come through and the hype and the adrenaline is gone, they don't have anything.
Right.
But in this situation, he's going to be able to sustain that fear, you know, for only 30 or 46 minutes. So I see him just really possibly taking punches that he would never normally take, putting himself in situations where, you know, he shouldn't be there because his skill set doesn't dictate that. But that drive to get that get back
right.
is going to be a monster.
Yeah, I agree. And if what Malik Scott said in the press conference about the fact that they've been working on a lot of different skill sets comes to fruition. And I'm going to paraphrase because I don't like to put words in people's mouths, but it was something to the effect that, you know, we've been working on tools that Deontay Wilder has had, but has chosen not to use them. So he's had these tools, but oftentimes when he gets into fights, he just goes to the go-to power and he uses the tool that he knows he can get the job done with, which doesn't allow him to really use many of the other skill sets and kind of shows like a one-dimensional Deontay Wilder. And Malik Scott commented that what he really tried to do was something very, very simple, which was just to remind Deontay Wilder of these other things that he has in his toolbox that he just chooses not to use. And
true.
Yeah, I thought that was a really, really clever way, both as a coach to talk about his fighter, but also in terms of the strategy going into the fight, you know, how does that look when they actually do compete?
Well, if you look back at his fight with Ortiz,
yeah,
he boxed in that fight. He threw the jab. He was in and out.
Yep.
He dropped the right hand. He went from left to right. That was actually boxing. It wasn't A-plus boxing, but it was boxing, which he doesn't really, you know, do all the time. But
right.
In that fight, he was boxing. So for Malik to say that he does have those tools, you can look back at one of his previous fights. You can see,
right.
You know, resemblance of those tools are there, and they have been utilized.
Yeah.
So if mentally he can put aside this angst, this anger, this get back, and think about boxing, he should be able to, you know, to use some of that. I'm just worried about the anger can overwhelm him, but he has a chance with the anger, so I can't really
I think
either way with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Deontay Wilder has so much to prove in this fight. Although he did say in the press conference that he has nothing to prove, right? I get that. But, you know, I mean, I'm sure somewhere deep-seated inside of his soul as a fighter and as a gladiator that he really has something to prove to himself that he can get the job done. So to say you have nothing to prove is maybe not completely accurate. I don't know. I mean, he said what he said. But, you know, at the end of the day, for him to be able to beat the Gypsy King, you know, after coming out of two losses, you know, I think it's a huge chance. It's a huge opportunity for him. And if he comes in hot the way he looks like he's going to, you know, he could give Tyson Fury a run for his money for sure. You know, and I think that that is why this is one of the biggest fights of the year, if not the biggest fight of the year, you know?
I agree. We know Tyson has a skill set. We know he has a strategy to beat Deontay. We know this. We've seen him. He's stronger at certain times. He ragdolled him around in the second fight, just threw him where he wanted to throw him, you know, kind of just walked to him. He just kind of went in at him at his leisure, actually. You know, it was an easy fight for him in a sense. But this time, it's going to be just a little different in that the opposition, you know, is going to be a little stouter, and opposition is going to, you're going to have to kill me type of thing.
Yeah.
Well, I may be taking these punches I don't need to take. I may be in a situation where I got to take some just to try to give some, which is not my style, but I'm going to do this because I have this mandate that I must go through.
Right.
And sometimes some fighters, the other fighters said, that guy is just crazy. He's inhumanly crazy. I did my best. I'm a better fighter. But on that night, he just was like some kind of Superman, some kind of alien type thing. And I've heard fighters say that, you know, that particular night, that, and they never recreate that. They're just motivated for that situation.
So there's a couple of things I want to chat with you about. One of which is like, you know, this to me, as I start to lay out the variables in this fight, I'm thinking that as much as this is a fight, a heavyweight fight, where anything can happen at the blink of an eye, the fight can change at any time during the course of this championship bout. However, I also think that this is also a fight that is going to be won based on who makes the correct adjustments. Knowing that these guys know each other, and knowing that these guys, both of these champions, have been in the ring with each other, and they have both made adjustments coming into this third fight, this is going to be, as much as it is a fight between Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury, it's also a fight between Sugar Hill and Malik Scott. And I can't stress that enough, because the guys who make the best adjustments in this fight will most likely be the ones that win this fight, this third trilogy fight.
Yeah, we touched on that on our last podcast. And what you just said was spot on. You know, you're absolutely right. I just see that if the waters get too deep, Sugar Hill may have a little more experience. And like we said before, if they're going by every word their trainer is telling them,
right,
I would think Sugar Hill will have a little more experience on how to deal with the other situation.
Right.
Whereas on the other side, he's not necessarily been there before. They've never even done a fight together when he was a head trainer. So, you know, those variables are there.
Yeah, you know, and so like you said, the question becomes, for the listeners, is does the person, Tyson Fury and Sugar Hill have been working together. They've known each other since 2010. So it goes all the way back to Detroit, Michigan, right? They know each other from back then. They have a great line of communication. I think one of the attributes and the things that can really play a big role in this fight is the communication that they can, you know, and the adjustments that they can make on the fly. And the question goes to you, Harold. Does Wilder and Malik Scott, the fresh new voice in the corner, the guy? Now, Malik Scott has been in Wilder's camp for a very long time. He's not new to the camp, but he's got a lot of new things that he's trying to get Wilder to use in the fight. And do those things end up being reminders, or does he still have, beyond those things, adjustments that he's willing and able to make throughout the fight. Take note, okay? I'm saying this to you, Malik Scott. Make sure you have those adjustments in your playbook for the night of the fight, because the question becomes, like, it's one thing to teach him or remind him of skills that we know he has. It's another thing to make those adjustments in the fight. They're as two different things.
As a trainer, of course, that is, you know, spot on for him. So I hope he hears you and you understand that situation. I've got to go all the way back to the very beginning for me, between Scott and Deontay Wilder. Deontay Wilder knocked him out early in their fight.
Right.
First round. They became friends after that.
Yeah.
Deontay Wilder's training at home. This could be a situation where everyone is a yes man, including Malik. So does Deontay respect him enough? Does he get enough discipline where he's going to feel that he has to incorporate this?
Right.
So he won't disappoint his trainer. Or is he just his boy?
Yeah.
You know, on par.
That
is the part that concerns me, because an old school trainer like Mark, if you train him, I don't care if you think we're friends, we're not. I'm the trainer. I am going to put you through the paces whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
I don't know if Malik is going to put Wilder through the paces because they are friends, and does he have the autonomy to put his foot on Deontay's neck and make him work?
Yeah.
Now,
yeah. Good point, Harold. Very good point. House,
you got the food and all that. Everyone's right there. So who really ran the show? Who is forcing him to work? Now, I say that to say this. In the fight, will Wilder respect his direction? Did he respect him during the training, during the run-up, to actually do what he said he wanted to do? Or he just put people around him who was going to help him the way he wanted to, and then he would decide how he would fight to fight regardless of what was said.
Right.
That's the only caveat that I see.
Yeah. No, you know, just to touch on, you know, look, there's going to be a lot of things to consider here. I don't know if you heard, it just came off the wire. They just announced all three judges and referees are coming out of the United States for this fight. So, you know, I don't know if that plays into against Fury, you know, and does it play in favor of Wilder? They announced the officials for Saturday's Fury versus Wilder 3 fight. And so the referee is Russell Mora is the referee.
I work with him.
Yep. And the judges are Dave Moretti, Tim Cheaton, or Chelten.
I work with him.
And then Steve Weisfeld.
I work with him.
So those are the three.
All those gentlemen that were named, I've done fights with them where we were ringside together and my car and their car went to decide a fight.
Right.
So I know those guys as far as their understanding.
Right.
As far as my understanding is with them. Now, Mora is the right kind of referee because he is not going to be breaking them up. He's going to allow them to work on the inside.
Right. Right.
So if Deontay is going to work on the inside, he's going to have opportunity because that's Mora's thing.
Right.
He allows them to break down. He uses his voice. He's not a hands-on, I'm going to push you apart type of thing.
Right.
He uses his voice. So his voice is what breaks them. So that allows them to get a little more work in before they actually physically break. As far as the judge is concerned, you know, we all know Weisfeld and Cheatham and the other gentleman. So I've been around them, worked with them, and you know, I can't really comment on what their style is or what have you. But whenever I work with them, we are basically on the same kind of accord type of thing. So they are excellent judges for the situation. They're going to see it unencumbered. They're going to see it the way it is. The biggest factor to me is Russell Moore in the ring as a referee.
Yeah, oh, big time.
He is the one that's going to allow the action to be to go the way it needs to go naturally.
Well, and because there's so much anger in coming into this fight, there's so much bad feelings coming into this fight. You know, you're going to have Tyson Fury wondering about these judges, right? And you're going to have Tyson Fury also on the flip side, taking things into his own hands. And you got to wonder, you know, is he going to hit behind the head? Are there going to be those rabbit punches that we saw, you know, in some of the previous fights? What is Russell Moura going to do, you know, when there are those rabbit punches? How's he going to deal with that? You know, so there's a lot of, there's going to be a lot of other variables going into this fight as well. But I just thought the fans out there should know that we have, you know, Dave Moretti, Tim Cheltan, and Steve Weisfeld that are going to be the judges, and Russell Moura is the referee for this fight. So that was just announced today, I believe, and, you know, just ahead, a couple of days ahead of the actual fight. So, you know, all I'm saying is there's a lot here, man, and the one thing I wanted to say about the press conference is at the end of the press conference, like they talked about meaning Fox and ESPN and PBC, everyone involved. They talked about the fact that they did not want a face-off, specifically because they did not have security on that stage. And Bob Arum was livid, man. He was out of control, livid at the end of that press conference because the young lady, what is her name?
Kate.
Yeah,
Kate Abdo.
She actually called for a face-off, not knowing that they had already agreed that there would not be a face-off. So no, you know, it wasn't like she meant, like she did it anyway. She did. I don't think that they told everybody else, but they didn't tell her. And she's the one conducting the interview. And she didn't know that there wasn't going to be a face-off. Had those two faced off, they could have possibly killed each other the way that they were, you know. I mean, there could have been, it could have been another Canelo, Caleb Plant situation, you know, and God forbid anybody got cut 2 days before the fight, you know.
Or a sprained ankle or a sprained wrist.
Forget
it. From pushing or anything could have happened.
Yeah.
The staging of that press conference was somewhat different. In boxing, they call the stage a dais. And the dais, in my opinion, wasn't set up properly. Miss Abdo should have been elevated. She should have been on a higher platform.
Right.
So she could look down on the other two. Now, she attempted that by having Tyson sit down, but she still just would have been eye level. I would have her elevated some to create that air of I'm presiding over the situation.
Yeah, right.
And so that was minus, and because he didn't sit down. So it didn't really have the proper feel. I'm sure the publicists and everyone in the future is looking at all of this. And I guarantee the very next one that she does or is done in that situation will be set up completely different because she lost all control strictly because of eye level contact of where she was placed.
Right.
And all of that. So when she called for the face off, I was surprised because there was no one on stage who could stand in between. Of course, right. They do something like that, Mark, as you know, it starts to get kind of theatrical and you try to push everyone up, but there was no one to even play that role.
Right.
And I know she wasn't going to be able to kind of do that. So when it was called off, I was like, great.
Yeah. I mean, I was just sitting there biting my fingernails going, oh my gosh, are these guys going to kill each other before the fight? Are we going to not have a fight because of this? And sure enough, they both exited the arena. They went their separate ways. Well, actually, Tyson Fury stayed on the stage, calling him a dosser some more, and, you know, screamed at him as he was leaving the arena as, Deontay Wilder exited the arena, so it was something, man. It was quite a spectacle.
It was well done. If you're one who doesn't like authority, you don't like that type of control.
Yeah.
That whole out of control that Tyson was exhibiting. If that's your personality, you loved it because he just was going against the status quo. I'm not sitting down. I'm going to scream. I'm going to do whatever I want to do. I'm not going to be, at all. Whereas another type of person likes the controlled animosity. When you get your turn, you can go off. And then when he gets his turn, he goes off.
Yeah.
And we get to see both sides instead of one just dominating the other. So it all depends on how the fans like their press conferences.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So listen, Harold, we could talk about this fight all day long. Let me just remind you all, this fight is a pay-per-view event. It's on ESPN Plus and Fox pay-per-view, 9 Eastern Standard Time, 6 Pacific Time. And y'all need to get your tickets. Y'all need to go and get that pay-per-view and watch this fight. This is a historic fight. This is the golden era right now in this generation anyway. The heavyweight division is about to heat up. There is going to be one soap opera after the other for the next year or two. And you're about to see some must-see boxing. If you are a boxing fan, tune in. Harold and I will be there. We will be tuning in. We will be watching this show. And it's going to be out of control. I hope that you guys have enjoyed being with us tonight. You've enjoyed the conversation about the Wilder and Fury mega match. And Harold, I just want to thank you for spending your time with the fans and with me. It's always a pleasure. And you add such insightful commentary, and it's wonderful to be with you. And I guess as much as I don't want to say goodbye to our fans for the night, I think it's time to say that's all for tonight, folks. So I hope you've enjoyed the show. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share the Boxing Breakdown on YouTube. And do not forget to check us out on Apple Podcasts. If you're driving around in your car, listen to it. Listen to it in your car. We love to be with you. We love to take the ride with you wherever you're going. And tell a friend in the boxing community. We're growing the channel. We're growing what we're doing. And we're really, really pumped about being able to share boxing with you. So until next time, peace and love. On behalf of Harold Hunt and myself, we are out. We'll check you on the other side. Thank you very much for listening in.
Fight fans, join host Mark Roxy and special guests as they break down all aspects of the boxing world, including news, business, management, training, promotions, fan reactions, upcoming events, matchups, future boxing stars, title fights, state of the boxing world, and all the stuff you don't see when you watch boxing. This podcast is released each week on Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Live streamed on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook Live. It's the Boxing Breakdown, hosted by Mark Roxy.